Online Trading Academy's core strategy is patented and built on the timeless principles of supply and demand. Text Cairo to 57682 to learn how you can trade stocks using this patented core strategy. Text Cairo to 57682.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Greg Tomlin and G. Scott sitting in for Dory today. G, where's the love?
What you mean, where the love? I always got love for you, my man.
I got to take the listeners behind the scenes to the Cairo Radio Studios for a moment.
Okay.
So we're sitting here biding our time for 6 minutes between the last segment and this first segment of the Fastest 15.
Sure.
I'm sitting here. I'm feeling good about how the first hour went. Out of the corner of my eye, I see you raise your phone, G. And it's pointed right at me, right?
Yeah.
For like an uncomfortable amount of time, like maybe 4 or 5 seconds. In my head, in that instant, I get this narrative going. Like, G. Scott's taking a picture of me. Maybe he's going to, like, post it online. So I start posing for his cell phone. I'm like, yeah, it's Greg. I'm in Cairo Radio Studios. And G, lo and behold, has reversed the camera, and he's got it pointed at himself and Ursula. He goes, that's my girl, Ursula. Let's get a picture with Ursula. So I'm over here, if everybody's watching the live stream on Cairo, and I'm making a pose, a silly pose, because I think G is showing me the love. And little did I'm being blocked out of harmony and this beautiful relationship budding over here. G, where's the love?
You don't give me hugs like Ursula does.
Yes.
Ursula gives me the best hugs every single day.
Hugging is all I need
buds.
To do.
Well, let me ask you, what's more awkward? What was more awkward? You posing for a camera shot, which you thought was, you know, you're being videoed on.
So awkward.
Or the handshake that you attempted with me before the show.
So I tried a secret handshake with G, which we have not established yet. And so the implication was I want to establish a secret handshake with G, but I knew it was going to be awkward. But that's part of the charm, is that you create the awkward situation knowing that that's going to want to happen. Then it endears you to me.
Oh, so it was intentional.
Oh, there was a lot of ulterior motives at play with my fake secret handshake with G before the show. We have to have a good rapport, G.
Man, it just, the awkward handshakes are always fun.
Try the hugs.
Are always,
try the hugs.
Hey, hug me next time, bro.
G would punch me in the face if I went in for a frontal hug.
Everybody knows around here I am a lover and not a fighter.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What are we talking about right now?
Let's get into the Fastest 15. Okay, here's our first story. Seattle has ranked in at number 4 as far as most hipster city in the world.
Okay.
This is a subject I know nothing about because I've never been classified as a hipster. I've never tried to be a hipster. I don't know what constitutes a hipster, but we come in right behind Brighton and Hove in the UK. Portland is number 2, Salt Lake City number 3, Seattle number 4 for hipster city in the world.
I am excited about this, and here's why. The older I become, the more of a hipster that I become. I'm talking about the thrift stores, love it. Tattoo parlors, love it. There's rent inflation that goes into it. Don't love it, but it's true.
You've adopted this vegan diet.
And the vegan diet that I've been on since December 4th of 2017. Then the microbreweries. Let me tell you something, man. The only thing that I don't like about where Seattle comes in at is that Portland, Oregon wins again. Portland, Oregon has a vegan mini mall in which they got everything down there. But Seattle in there. Look, man. And plus, let's be real. Hipster, coffee. I mean, I can have coffee, vegan food, every single day and go get more tattoos.
Well, what's fascinating is this Move Hub study, apparently.
Okay.
They looked at 5 data points for like the ethos of what makes a hipster.
Mm-hmm.
One was the number of vegan eateries in the city, the number of coffee shops, the number of tattoos, vintage boutiques, and record stores per 100,000 city residents. I gravitate towards one of those things, and that's record stores. But I didn't know that those were the 5 bullet points for what makes a hipster. Would you say Sean DeTore is a hipster?
I would say he was the most.
Do you match all of those criterium, Sean?
Yeah, I match a lot of things that would constitute me as being a hipster, I suppose.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine with it.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, hipster is not a 4-letter word. No.
It's not at all. And when you look at me, Sean, would you think that I'm a hipster? What do you think?
I wouldn't think so right from looking at you.
All right.
But
why
you know,
is that?
Tell me Because I guess you dress more of like a sports guy.
Oh, there you go, point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And good. When you look at me, you think hipster right away when you look at me?
Actually, yes.
I think married because man.
I think married man. I think thrift store.
I think you rank higher in hipster than G.
What?
Yeah.
For real?
I think
the
vegan. I think vegan diet.
Yeah, thanks. That's a slight.
I think microbreweries.
Do you judge people for driving? Apparently, that's one of the prerequisites for a hipster.
Do you judge people for driving?
No, I don't judge people at all for driving because I am the one in the slow lane. I don't speed anymore. I mean, I did in my 20s. Now, what are you speeding for? You're in Seattle. There's traffic. Stop. Slow down. It takes you an hour to get to everywhere you need to go. You need to go to your kid's school? Hour. You need to go to the restaurant? Hour. You need to go to work? Hour. Quit speeding.
Okay, what about do you actively choose to wear glasses that you know don't flatter your face just because they're big and obnoxious?
G's pulling them out.
Absolutely! Are you kidding me?
Those look good.
Yes, if you're on the live stream right now,
gosh.
I got them ready.
Man, you look like the dude from Iron Eagle. What's his name?
I was just going to say.
Luke Gossett Jr.?
Yes.
Oh, dude.
Luke Gossett Jr., look, this is what I'm talking about. You keep an obnoxious pair of glasses on you at all times because you're in Seattle, you never know when the sun is going to come out. By the way, sun, I'm waiting for you. I miss you, boo.
The first thing I thought when you put on those sunglasses were I have the need for speed. I was thinking Tom Cruise and Top Gun. Those are slick. But okay, Seattle comes in at fourth on the hipster list. I just don't know if that's something to celebrate or something to look down upon. The whole hipster vibe in general, I don't understand what the worldview or outlook is or what it really describes as the essence of that person.
Well, see,
I've never understood it.
Being a hipster is cool. You just got to watch out for those arrogant, holier-than-thou hipsters that think that what they're doing is the best thing and, like, they're right because they're vegan, organic, whatever they're doing. It's the arrogant ones that you don't like.
Okay.
They're made up of peace and love.
That's right.
When the last time you went to a party and, like, oh, the party wasn't no good because some hipsters got into a fight. Doesn't happen.
Right.
They're always bringing the peace and the love to the party. That's me and the obnoxious glasses.
I was always told it was hip to be square. Mm. Okay, next up in the fastest 15. So multimillionaire and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak has finally revealed the secret formula for happiness. It's about time someone addressed this topic, but this is making international headlines right now. And apparently he says all it takes to achieve this elusive concept of happiness is, quote, down-to-earth laughter and smiles. He did admit that money plays a role, but for him, it's the simple things in life. He said, maybe success with money makes you happy too, but for me, it was really just down-to-earth laughter and smiles, so I came up with my formula. This is right there with Einstein's theory of relativity, okay? He says, happiness equals smiles minus frowns.
Agree.
Okay.
Agree 100%.
Right. You think this is profound, G.
Would you agree, though, that it's a lot easier to smile when you don't have to worry about money?
Right. At what point, I agree with you.
I mean, money doesn't guarantee happiness. No, that's for sure.
You're 100% right. I mean, being financially poor my entire adult life, yeah, there was many times I frowned because of lack of money, you know, and I was pretty used to getting that yellow envelope in the mail. That means about to cut your stuff off. I don't know if you guys probably get that, but I still to this day only pay my bills when I get the yellow envelope. Anyways, when it really comes to happiness and things, I used to argue a lot on social media.
Yeah.
A lot.
You're not alone in that.
I've gotten a lot better. My father used to call me up and just get upset with me all the time. And he'd say, no matter if you win the argument or not, even if you win, you still come away feeling a certain type of way. He says, no, tell me the truth. Even if you win the argument, you still kind of feel down about yourself. No matter what type of argument you're in, stay away from arguing. That's the best way to feel good about your life is, man, try to limit the amount of arguments that you're in. And I find myself, you can get on social media and you can argue about any and everything.
Oh, and people are ready and willing to take the bait.
Absolutely. And these days, you can argue about everything. Hey, the earth is flat. There you go. There's an argument. I mean, you can argue about, by the way, I don't believe the earth is flat, but that's where we are today, where there is no such thing as the truth. We're learning that these days.
I think what you said there was far more profound than what Steve Wozniak said here. Smiles minus frowns, doesn't that sound like the most superficial thing you could say about happiness? And I'm not dissing on what you said. I agree with what you said. But happiness is this fleeting thing that can never be sought after directly. I always think that happiness is a byproduct or a result of seeking something else, a lasting happiness, a joy, because smiles are fleeting. Like those moments of happiness, all I need to do is have a good attitude and a fluffy demeanor in life. That only goes so far.
But I think, I think it's just been boiled down to something that's way too simplistic. But I think everyone has a different definition of happiness. What makes you happy?
That's true.
And I will say, one point that he does make is, you know what? When people are always happy, those are the people you want to hang out with. Those are the people you gravitate to. And you know who is the curmudgeon in the building all the time. And you're like, okay, stay away. Don't ruin my day.
Yeah.
So he does have a point. I do think, though, that when you have problems that you don't know when you can pay your next bill, et cetera, it is harder. So for Steve Wozniak to say it's just as simple as smiles.
He smiles when he makes his trips to the bank.
It's all about what we want to cater to. Sometimes, and I'll speak for myself, sometimes there's been times that I've wanted to be in relationships that were more toxic instead of the simpler ones. Mm-hmm. I'd say, those were boring, right? Which would probably have given me more smiles, but I choose to get the more frowns in those situations. Or you start news stories. How about that? How about just as simple as news stories? If you just got on here right now and said, hey, firefighters rescued a cat out of the tree, is that big news? No, because it's good news. You want to hear some juicy type of news
right there.
You want to hear what happened at Coachella. You want to hear what's going on in the national news, those type of things.
Here's my two cents on this. Mm-hmm. Happiness is one thing, and maybe it's a different subject, but I'm much more concerned with joy and well-being. And I would put those things in different categories because I always think happiness is sort of elusive and it comes and it goes. I can feel happy eating a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And I did it last week, but ultimately it made me probably a worse person at the end of the day because I gained some poundage and I get lazy and lethargic. But it gave me that happiness for that little amount of time. So what I think we should really be more concerned with is well-being and abiding joy. And I think the two things that give you the best chance at that in life are the two R's, religion and relationships. Time and time again, it shows if you have a deep faith and if you are in deep relationships in a community, your happiness levels and your joy levels are off the charts. And I don't think it's as simple as, turn that frown upside down. That's the correct formula. I think it's much more deeper than that. Some people who have really bad circumstances can still have a really deep, rich joy at their heart because their well-being is not circumstantial. It doesn't depend on where they're at in life or whether they have a low-paying job or a high-paying job. They have a happiness that transcends any sort of like life circumstance in the moment.
I think, too, if we all lead with kindness and compassion,
right?
I think just every day, whether it's on your social media postings or whether it's just how you deal with people day to day, I love that G said hello to me and put me on we were talking about Kendrick
Lamar.
Lamar and his,
absolutely.
And he wanted to see how I was reacting because my sons introduced me to Kendrick Lamar and I love his music.
Yes.
You know what? Just little things that you can do to kind of give people a little reason to smile. It's awesome.
I can't wait a minute, Greg. There's something you got me on. You said religion and relationships.
Yep.
Now, look, I'm not going against that.
Uh-huh.
But you can't sit here and just say that just a relationship, being in a relationship, is going to make things better. Because there are such things as toxic relationships. And if you don't do the things right beforehand, right? If you don't take care of you, if you are not smiling, then the relationship is not smiling. So you just can't You can't leave the listeners with just getting a relationship and things is going to be all better.
Important point of clarification. Couldn't agree more.
Okay.
I'm speaking about relationships more broadly. I'm talking about community, family, friends, coworkers, really healthy, rich relationships with those around you, your neighbors. I'm not simply talking romantic relationships.
Fair enough. Now, how do those relationships become good relationships? When you're talking about family, community, coworkers, how do those become good? You have to feed those, right?
Yes. It's what you and Ursula are talking about. Kindness, investment of time, patience, positivity, investing yourself and your resources in somebody else. Relationships are hard work. I don't care. They shouldn't come easy. We get this idea of romantic relationships in particular. When I enter into it, I should have butterflies and, I have this vision of a Hollywood romance. Love and pouring yourself out for another is hard work. Love is a verb. It's an action. It's something you have to do and think about and work at. Love is tough. It's not something that just comes, oh, well, it feels right. No, no, no. It's much deeper and richer than that. All right. Speaking of love, Taylor Swift. I don't know.
We got to get to this. Please hurry up and get to this. I really need to.
We're going to run out of time here. So one of the most iconic, amazing songs from the 1970s. One of my favorites is actually Earth, Wind, and Fire's September. Back in my days of being a wedding DJ, struggling wedding DJ, I would always start off the dance with this song, and it would get everybody on the dance floor immediately. Never failed me in all the years that I would do that. So Taylor Swift thought, you know, this song is so popular, I love it so much, she was going to release her own version of it. Let's get you a taste of the original first. Oh, so good. Guitar. So good. I don't even want to play the Taylor Swift version now.
Everybody is dancing to that. And if you're not, come on now, live a little bit. Okay, now let's go to Taylor Swift. What'd she do? What'd she
Taylor,
do to the song?
Amp it up, Taylor. Let's hear
go, Taylor.
It.
Let's go.
Do you remember the 28th of September?
It's supposed to be 21st.
Changing the minds of pretenders. Chasing the clouds away.
Chasing. I don't know, G.
I just don't know why she did this. She writes her own songs. She writes lots of great songs.
I just want to say, you know, I'm guilty, meaning I've listened to Taylor Swift. I actually happen to like her. I really do like Taylor Swift. No shame on that. However, bless her heart.
Here's the payoff. Here's the payoff. Let's bring it back up. Okay, that's enough. Continue,
I mean, for her to have the courage to write or try to rewrite or remake this song, and by the way, Earth, Wind, and Fire September is one in which I don't care where you're from, where you've been in life, you get up and you just feel yourself. I just think about a nice little glass of wine when I listen to that. But then Taylor Swift goes ahead and tries it again. Bless her heart. I really appreciate her trying to do this. But
I was told by a friend one time, if there's really someone you can't stand in your life, but you're trying to take the high road, you always say, you know, bless their heart. That's never a good thing when you say bless their heart.
Oh, you know about that, huh?
It does take tremendous courage to butcher a song by Earth, Wind, and Fire. This just totally changed the essence of the original in a bad way. Sometimes it's great to tweak a song or to do your own thing with it, but this did not work for me on any level. And, Taylor Swift, stick to your own material for the time being and don't slow down an iconic dance song and turn it into something that sounds full of angst and yearning and longing. It sounds like they should be in front of a fireplace playing footsie with like her boyfriend and they're drinking coffee and they're snuggies. And that didn't do it for me.
It didn't work.
Okay. Last story in our fastest 15.
Oh, you better make it quick. We got to go.
I am going to make it quick.
Okay.
Baychella. What is Baychella? It's Beyoncé, who appeared at Coachella over the weekend. I was watching the live stream on my YouTube app for Apple TV, and she apparently stole the show. But there was some controversy because she didn't want photos of herself posted anywhere online. And was it because there was a wardrobe malfunction, Nicole?
Oh, I don't know. No, I think she just has a thing about it. She's her people have said they asked all publications not to publish any pictures that were taken by fans just so they can
control that
how well she's presented.
That's a futile enterprise.
I got nothing on Beyonce. Shout out to Sean right now. Shout out to Sean for playing that real Earth, Wind, and Fire. Let it ride. Hey! So tough, huh?
Do you remember when it was September? Love was changing.
Back here on Cairo Radio, it's Greg Tomlin and G. Scott in for Dory Monson today. And now it's time for something completely different. One of my favorite documentaries of all time is a film called The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. And it's all about the retro arcade game, Donkey Kong. And the filmmakers caught lightning in a bottle. And they featured a protagonist and an antagonist of their story to highlight the game and the obsession around these retro video games. And the subject of the film centers around a man named Steve Wieb and another guy, his adversary, named Billy Mitchell. And yeah, there's some friendly gamesmanship, but the story really takes on a life of its own and goes in directions you can't predict. And it's all about how these two men are looking for Donkey Kong glory and achieving the high score of this arcade game. And the film ends with Billy Mitchell, who's really the antagonist of the film, setting these Donkey Kong records, but there's some suspicion on whether or not his achievements were really done in the utmost honest way. Lo and behold, this film is back in the news, and its subjects are back in the news, because it turns out that Billy Mitchell may have fabricated all his high scores. And so we're revisiting this cultural phenomenon known as the King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. So now the current record holder, or the guy who was first to break a million points on this game, his name is Steve Wieb, and he lives right here in our backyard in the Puget Sound area. He's a teacher at a high school in Redmond, and he joins us now. I'm really excited about this interview. Steve Wieb, thanks for pulling away from your classroom for a second and joining us on Cairo Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I hate to correct you, but
please do.
One of the things in the film, they called me Steve Wieb. You must have been watching it too much. It's actually Weeby. I don't really care much, but just thought
funny
that you were referring to the. It was.
It got so embedded in my subconscious because I've seen the movie three times that I heard it mispronounced so many times.
My teacher's name, Brother Steve, was Mrs. Weeby. So I was wondering, and I was thinking, huh. Oh, okay. It's not Weeby. I had a Mrs. Weeby.
Okay, so Steve, I have to ask you right at the outset, were you surprised by the news that it turns out Billy Mitchell's records pertaining to the Donkey Kong arcade game are in fact dubious? Were you surprised by the news?
I was kind of surprised that they were able to lay down the law and retract his records. I knew for a few years now that there was gamers that were there was rumblings that he had his gameplay, for instance, when we were to go to these Kong offs, he wouldn't be able to put up any numbers that were indicative of his world record scores. So people started in the gaming community started to wonder, is he legit? And then, so they were mentioning this at one of the Kong offs, and I've always thought, I believe his scores were real back in the King of Kong days. So I didn't think of anything of it then, but then, most recently, another he's not a record holder on Donkey Kong, but he's his name's Jeremy Young. He's started this Donkey Kong forum, and he's, for some reason, somebody thought of looking at these videos of Billy's scores back in 2010, 2007.
Yeah, they're featured in the film prominently.
Yeah, and the filmmakers made a reference that they hinted that they might have been suspect. The VHS was glitching out when they were viewing it, but they still approved his record in the movie.
This is captivating drama. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely a soap opera in the making here.
How does one actually cheat at Donkey Kong?
That's a good question. There's a couple ways. You could either splice together tapes, which is going to be caught no matter what, with a real Donkey Kong arcade board. But what they are noticing about his game is the frame by frame analysis basically shows that the screen images as they are being rendered. So there's transition screens that when you move from one screen, you complete a board and you go to the next board. If you slow it down screen frame by frame, Billy's tapes exhibit a behavior that's only indicative of MAME and not the real arcade. So it's really hard to explain without a visual, but there's a whole write-up. Forensic scientists were involved on all this. It's kind of crazy how they determine who would ever think to look at a still frame and analyze it in microseconds.
Steve.
But some people did, and they noticed.
Steve, I got
pretty crazy.
Steve, I got to tell you, my man. After checking out this story and looking up everything and what you have done for this game, I now learn that people that aren't good at Donkey Kong go to Miss Pac-Man, and that's what I did. I went to Miss Pac-Man. Steve, how did you know? How did you know earlier on that you were going to be really good at the game Donkey Kong?
That's a good question. I was pretty average back in the early 80s when I was at 13, 14 years old. I was getting to this elevator screen that no one could get by. It's the third elevators, and everybody died there. And then eventually, like in college, I got my own Donkey Kong machine, and I learned how to get past that screen. And from there, I just kept getting my high score higher and higher, and it seemed very natural to me. The game just seemed easy. And once I learned how to get past those third elevator screens. And then in summer, I think it was 1991, I got to this kill screen where the game is this infamous level 22 where Mario just is walking along and just dies for no apparent reason. And that's what I saw, and I wondered what the heck's going on. And it turns out that this is actually a normal bug in the game. And I thought that maybe I was running into an invisible barrel. But it turns out that this was normal behavior, and I just went, and I didn't even know that at the time. I went back and played it again to see if I could get to it. I was trying to get 1,000,000 points back in 1991, and it happened again. And then I just eventually just said, okay, I guess my machine's broken, and I'm done playing this game because I can't get by this single screen. So I sold it, and then a few years later, actually probably 9 years later, when the internet was up and running, I was able to find the actual high score. Billy Mitchell had it at the time, and I remember my score in 1991 was better than Billy, so I knew that my scores were good. I didn't know how good they were at the time, but once I learned that there were world record scores, I just said, hey, I'm going to go ahead and might as well try to get this world record and have some fun.
So, Steve, it's interesting you mentioned why you gravitated towards the Donkey Kong arcade game, and we're talking with Steve Wiebe here. He's in the news because he's the star of the documentary King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, and his adversary in that film has been stripped of all his records pertaining to the Donkey Kong video game because it turns out he fabricated some of his high scores. That person's name is Billy Mitchell. So Steve Wiebe is now the record holder for first person to achieve 1,000,000 points at the classic Donkey Kong arcade game. And Donkey Kong really is all about hand-eye coordination, as is most of these retro games. And you played drums, you played baseball. Don't you think there's really a crossover there between what makes you a good gamer and what makes you a good athlete?
Yeah, I think having the definite hand-eye coordination, drumming kind of gives you a timing and rhythmic. So that's similar to in Donkey Kong when you're, especially like the elevators, there's some timing going on. And in barrels, when you're manipulating Mario and dodging barrels, there's definitely a rhythm that is reminding me of when I'm playing drums. You kind of get in the zone, and that's definitely, there's a crossover. And with math, I'm a math teacher, and I think having a problem-solving mind is helpful too, in finding the patterns and analyzing how can I maximize a score on this screen? Because now it's come down to, since there's a kill screen, the high scores are basically how do I point press and maximize every screen to get the most points possible before the kill screen. So that's the trick now.
So, Steve, on the surface, you're a high school teacher in Redmond now, but surely these feats of accomplishment pertaining to Donkey Kong have brought fame and fortune beyond your wildest dreams. But actually, you have been featured in filmmaker Seth Gordon's projects subsequently after King of Kong. You've had cameos in Four Christmases, the film, Horrible Bosses, The Goldbergs, and most recently Sneaky Pete. Is this just the beginning?
Yeah, it's a wild ride, that's for sure. The Sneaky Pete thing was, that was probably the most I've had in dialogue as far as in a cameo appearance. The other ones in Four Christmases, I think I said maybe one word, or I didn't say a word. And then the other ones, I might have said one word in Horrible Bosses.
Right.
But it's just, I've been his kind of his lucky charm. So Seth Gordon brought me along kind of as his lucky charm, and I've had fun with it. And I don't know if there's any more gigs out there for me or in the Hollywood business, but if it comes my way, I'm always happy to do it.
Steve, I got a gig yes. for you. I need you to help me out. I have kids at home right now that love video games. They love Fortnite, and that's the new big craze going on, the Overwatch. How can I be a more supportive parent to my children when it comes to video games?
That's a good question, and I don't know if I have a good answer. I guess I'm more tolerant of it since I was obsessive in my own younger days in video games. So I guess as long as the kid's getting his homework done and being respectful and doing his laundry and doing all the chores and is not just sitting around and just getting lazy and sitting on the couch for 8 hours a day, I guess if he gets outdoors and runs around a little bit, then I'd be in favor of any video games that he's doing.
My parent, as a parent, my kids, they're not going to hate me if I don't play with them, right? Do I need to play with them to show them that I support them?
No, only if they ask you and beg you to. My son plays this NBA game. It looks like it's a real basketball game. Every time I walk by it, I'm like, hey, well, there's another NBA game on. It's actually a video game. And he doesn't even ask me to play him. He's fully fine with playing on his own. I think when we were younger, we'd play a little bit of Mario Karts together. That's about the extent of the nature of our gaming together. But as far as if they don't really are asking you over and over to play, and then they're probably happy just to play with their friends.
So, Steve Wiebe, you have the rightful distinguished moniker of being the first player to reach 1 million points in Donkey Kong after Billy Mitchell was stripped of all his records. Last question for you. Do you still play the game? I know the overall record is now held by Robbie Lakeman, who's got 1.2 million points. Do you still try to break records? And can I invite myself over sometime? It'd be a dream come true. I want to play Donkey Kong with Steve Wiebe.
Yeah, you're always welcome to come over. I'll give you my address after we get off the air here.
Yes.
But I'm not really into the going for the world records anymore. Robbie's score is really, really up there. And in order for me to get even a chance to break it, I would have to basically lock myself in the garage for 10 to 12 hours a day for any number of days. I don't know how long. It might be months or years or whatever to even give an opportunity. So I'm happy with if I got the recognition for first to 1 million, that was one of my first goals was to do that. And Billy knew that as well, and he was chasing that. So to get recognition for that, that's definitely something I'll take. And if I'm never the champ again, that's fine with me.
Hey, the arc of history is long, something. But it bends towards justice.
I heard that somewhere also.
Yeah, there you go.
But I guess the saga is still going on. If you haven't looked, Billy's announced that he's going to make sure that his name's cleared and he's going to submit evidence that he hasn't cheated. So.
Well, we'll stand by.
Proper in the making.
Yeah, it could be. It could be King of Kong Part 2. Steve Wiebe, thanks so much for the time. Yeah. Really appreciate it, and have a great one.
Great. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Greg Tomlin and G. Scott sitting in for Dory today. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. Industrious Office is just an amazing workspace right in the heart of downtown Seattle, right on 6th and Lenora, right where everything Seattle has to offer is on your doorstep. And at Industrious, you can start with the right size office and then scale up as your team grows. Go to industriousoffice.com/Cairo, schedule a tour, mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Cairo Radio listeners miss their favorite show, they find it on demand. Maybe you should be advertising here. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
It's Greg Tomlin and G. Scott filling in for Dory Monson today. In our last segment here, I want to pay tribute to an actor who passed away at the age of 73 over the weekend. His name was R. Lee Ermey. The name probably doesn't ring a bell, but I bet if I played you a clip from one of his most iconic roles, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
What is that, Private Pile?
Sir, jelly donuts!
sir?
A jelly donut?
Sir, yes, sir.
How did it get here?
Sir, I took it from the mess hall, sir.
Is chow allowed in the barracks, private pie?
Sir, no, sir.
Are you allowed to eat jelly donuts, private pie?
Sir, no, sir.
And why not, private pie?
Sir, because I'm too heavy, sir.
Because you are a disgusting fat body, private pile.
Sir, yes, sir.
Arlie Ermey was famous for his many military roles he played over the year, and gee, he was just this embodiment of that tough, no-nonsense, gritty military man.
He was, man, and back in the day, Full Metal Jacket was one of my favorite movies, going to military school growing up, and then, of course, my father was a Marine, military, and just he was the ultimate drill sergeant. And so when you think drill sergeant, you think this guy. And
yeah,
what was interesting is I wanted to post it, but I thought people would say, oh, gee, you're just faking like you care. No, I actually care about this dude, man. And he's somebody that I thought would live to 100 years old. Rest in peace, my man.
Arlie Ermey, dead at the age of 73. Indeed, rest in peace. The Big Lead is coming up on The Dory Monson Show. Greg and G filling in.